Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony. You're listening to Comic Conversations, episode 243, where we talk all things comics for the week of August 28th, 2019. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Doing fine.
All right.
Okay.
In lieu of news, we will go straight into this week's books. Boom.
That's really weird because I can't hear the music. So, I was just trying to stay really quiet.
Oh, there you go.
Holding my breath.
Well, since Alex can't hear the song, I picked Radical Dreamer from Chrono Cross, the ending song.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I did beat that game twice.
Did you beat the with the good ending?
Both.
Where you activate the Chrono
Cross? Is the good ending the one where they have real-life Shala walking around Tokyo?
Yes, that's the one.
That's so fucking stupid. When you're making a sequel to a beloved game, don't have the entire thing be based around a minor character from the previous game who doesn't even really appear in your game.
And it, from her appearance, she looks nothing like she did in the previous game.
Well, because in the previous game, she was a video game character, and in this game, she was a Japanese woman.
But the thing is, in the game, she was a full-grown woman with blue hair, so in this game, they decided to make her a young blonde girl.
Well, she was, like, reincarnated or something. I don't know. That game was a fucking mess.
Good game. Terrible sequel.
I'd even debate it's a good game. The things you have to do to get the real ending, you could not do without a strategy guide. So that's a failure of...
Someone said the game sprinkles in the way to activate the cross.
Does it? But it was PS1 era RPG, so it had a shit translation. It was also written like shit. Like a PS1 era RPG.
I was just reading the comment section, the part where they show you how to beat Lavos. Or the Dream Eater, I'm sorry.
He's Lavos, though, kind of.
He's Lavos with Scala, and that makes him stronger for some reason.
Yeah. Because she... I don't fucking know. I haven't played Chrono Cross in a long time either. I got it on my phone.
Ooh, nice. I mean, not really, because that game's a little too complicated to be playing on the phone.
Not really. It's a fucking turn-based RPG.
Yeah, but the way the magic junctioning is and whatever, I always thought that was a little complicated and convoluted.
You could play through the whole game just hitting attack.
But you couldn't get the right ending. Let's be honest, both endings were pretty bad.
Well, there's once you get New Game Plus, you could technically get any ending you want, because it's easy then.
Yep. All right. With that out of the way, let's go into our books this week, which include Thor 16, Thanos 5, Marvel 1000, House of X 3, Absolute Carnage 2, Freedom Fighters 8, Flash 77, Books of Magic 11, and open up this week's books, Batman, Superman, number 1.
Okay, so the strength of this book was the writing of Batman and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
The weakness of this book is it's a direct follow-up to Batman Who Lulls, and it appears to completely ignore the ending of that series.
Which I'm fine with.
Where, now, apparently things happened in another book we weren't reading that I had to go do research on. So apparently Batman Who Lulls has a secret six. There are six heroes and or villains that he has infected with his Batman Who Lulls serum.
AIDS.
And in this series, we'll find out who they are. And the big twist at the end of this was that fucking Billy Batson was infected. So now there's a Shazam Who Laughs. But I had a slight problem with this in that, number one, nobody knows Billy Batson is Shazam. I mean, I suppose maybe Batman Who Lulls could have found that out on his world where he murdered everyone. But the other thing is, when he turns into Shazam, he would not retain anything he got when he was Billy Batson. So technically, there should be Billy Batson is Shazam Who Lulls, and Shazam should not be Shazam Who Lulls.
I hear what you're saying. It reminds me of the Jane Foster stuff with Thor. She would get the chemo, and as soon as she would transform into Thor, it would completely undo all the good the chemo had done.
It's kind of like that. Like, if Billy Batson breaks his arm, Shazam doesn't have a broken arm.
Also, you're going to sit there and tell me that whatever Batman Who Lulls, the serum he made or whatever to convert them into his followers, that would supersede magic?
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, now, Shazam is a bad guy is a good deal because Shazam is one of the superheroes who could just beat the shit out of Superman because mm-hmm. Superman's weak to magic. And, you know, Batman, Shazam doesn't have a weakness. Unless you get him to say Shazam. But in general, he doesn't have a weakness, so Batman can't really do anything to him. So it has that going for it. But I also think if there's going to be six of them, then he would be like the big hitter, I would think. So making him the first one revealed, while it's a good last image, it's kind of, you're kind of blowing your wad early.
Well, it's a number one. I've always been critical of number ones that don't feel the need to hook you right away.
It's fine. And how did Batman Who Lulls escape? I mean, I know I said at the end of the series, like, okay, so we know he's gonna escape, but they didn't even show him escape.
No, they couldn't be bothered. That's the one weakness of this book I'll give you.
Like, it's like, you gotta tell me what and Perry White is still going with, Batman's not even real. Even though he's in the Justice League, Jimmy Olsen just gave him a fucking picture of him.
I think that was the other universe.
No.
Yes.
Because Clark Kent went to see Batman. There were two different stories in this. They had the one where they were showing Batman Who Lulls in his world when he went after the Justice League, and they suggested he made a Superman Who Lulls. And then there was the main story. There was the main story about them doing cleanup on what he had done with the Secret Six. So I'm not sure. I still liked this. I liked it more than Batman Who Lulls.
I love the way Superman was written in this.
What, Boy Scout?
Yeah. And more so than usual. I mean, we've read other takes on Superman, but the Boy Scout was really driven to home in this issue.
Well, the way he framed it was Batman was talking to Superman about, you know, well, did you have a plan to take me down if I go evil, which, I mean, fucking Superman's plan is, yeah, I fly up into the fucking atmosphere and I laser eye your legs off, but, you know, whatever. He was just asking him if he did it, and Superman probably correctly assumed, he's like, you're asking me this to see if I've secretly been infected, and if I was lying, you'd know. And Batman was pretty much like, yeah, you're right, which I thought was cool, but, you know, he points out, he's like, no, of course not, I don't think like you. Because Batman's got plans for fucking everyone going evil.
Yep.
But, yeah. And I wonder why Batman Who Lulls, when he fully became Jokerized, he lost all his muscle mass. Because they showed him early on, and he was still Batman. He's still, like, a big dude. But now he's, like, a little skinny geek. And I mean, they did point out in this, you know, what, like, Batman and Superman shouldn't get along, but they kind of have this bond in that they would never kill. Like, they won't be as bad as their villains, which sort of unites them in a way. And, they even did the dueling inner monologues where, you know, Superman's thinking about what Batman's thinking about him, and it's exactly what Batman's thinking about him. And they didn't really do vice versa, except they did have Superman say, or Batman think, you know, the deal with Superman is he actually is that good of a person. Like, it's not an act with him. That's how he actually is, which is good. So Williamson's kind of showing deference to Superman, and we're not going to have a story where Superman's a dick unless he gets infected. But yeah, I mean, the Billy Batson being, having Shazam turn into laughing Shazam, like, it didn't bother me that much. It was just a small thing that kind of bugged me. But I mean, it's a good launching point for the series, and I think Williamson has been very good on Flash. It's nice for him to have something that's, you know, even more high profile. And they gave him a good artist too. So this series can work.
Yep. I got to give credit to the writer on this, Joshua Williamson. I wish they would put him on a Superman book and just have him write it forever.
Well, he's writing Flash now and he's writing this. So, I mean, you can only write so many books.
I know. But if I have to choose one or the other, I'd probably have him write a Superman book. You don't need Bendis to write both books. I imagine both aren't selling particularly well, so you don't need to put Bendis on both of them.
Well, but I want him to finish out his Flash run because he's been writing it for so long.
Oh yeah, I didn't say I want him to not write Flash. I'm not saying that. It's fully capable of him writing both books.
Theoretically, yeah.
Alex, I hate to break it to you, but there are several comic book writers that are writing more than one book.
But a lot of them aren't that good.
A lot of them are though.
Especially with DC's continuity, you got it's hard to keep track of how nothing actually connects.
No,
I was freaking out because there was some kind of reveal in Justice League 30, and they completely contradicted stuff going on in Flash right now. Like, he's talking about all these fundamental forces of the universe, and one of them was the Speed Force, and I'm like, the entire Flash storyline right now is about how there are four different forces, and they're all fundamental forces of the universe, and they're all fighting. And Snyder, whoever's like, no, there's six of them, and the Speed Force is one of them, and like the Steel Force and shit, that doesn't exist because he didn't mention it. And it's like, well, what the fuck? This is one of your Justice League members' books.
Yep.
But whatever.
So that was Batman Superman writer Joshua Williamson, art by David Marquez. Let's move on to our next DC book, Books of Magic 11, writer Cat Howard, art by Tom Fowler.
Okay, you could tell in the first four pages that this wasn't really his mom.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty obvious.
And then they revealed it by the end that it wasn't really his mom. So, once again with this book, it does not fuck around. Like, gives you a big reveal at the end of the last issue. First three pages of this issue reveals it's bullshit, makes you think it's bullshit. By the last page, you realize it is bullshit. And one of the other characters has confronted evil characters. And it's like, okay, we do not pause in this book. Good. This writer does not like long form storytelling. It's like, no, we're just gonna go, 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 go.
Now, mind you, I don't want every comic book written like that, but for this book, it actually works pretty good.
No, it does. So he's, the mom is back, but the first thing she asks is like, oh, so how many of the magic books have you found? Because the Cold Flame captured me, but they said they wouldn't kill me as long as I come back to you and tell you you can't do magic anymore. And he's like, oh, okay. And she's like, hey, by the way, can you show me the books you found? He's like, oh yeah, I got one of them, but it's the one where like, it won't show it to self to anyone but Tim. So she opens it up and she's like, well, this is blank. It's worthless. And he like sees like danger in it and go to Dr. Rose.
Mm-hmm.
So he does and explains what's going on to her. And she immediately says, okay, so you know, the only reason the book would do that is if the Cold Flame is near you. And he's like, oh, yeah, because my mom was kidnapped by him. And she's like, you know, that's not your mom, right? And he, of course, you know, he's a 13-year-old boy. So he gets all pissed off. Well, you say you know my mom better than me? I know my mom. It's really my mom. And she's like, yeah, it's not. And you can't just not do magic. He's like, well, what do you mean? I chose magic, so I unchoose magic. She's like, yeah, theoretically, you can choose not to do magic, but you'll be dead within a week. And he's all pissed off. And then she goes to, Because she tells all the students, because the bad shit that's happening, the students in the school are no longer allowed to go anywhere by themselves now.
Mm-hmm.
And the librarian who captured his girlfriend is being all super creeper. And he was in his office talking to the skull of the other dude who Tim killed. And Dr. Rose busts in the room, and they're both like, oh, shit, we're fucked now. And then the issue ended. So she's probably going to murder them, which for the problems they're having in the school is going to cause even more problems for everyone.
So that can't, that's not the real mother, right? Or do you think that's...
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not. I don't think it is, because the whole... I mean, they have the two storylines. It's him looking for his mom, and then him, you know, finally either being the super evil wizard or the super good wizard. So, which is a long-term story, but the finding the mom is a more short-term one. And without that, it's like, okay, we're going to go find more of the books, which isn't, you know, there's no personal element to that. So I think they want to keep the where's the mom more mysterious and out there. So, I mean, the Cold Flame, they use magic too. They're evil, but they use magic. So... Have they ever explained why they want to kill him and why they don't want to, like, turn him to their side?
Because just like everybody else, they know he's going to be a powerful wizard, but they don't know if it's going to be for good and bad. So they're just probably siding on the side of caution.
Okay. Because I know in the original Books of Magic, the miniseries that Gaiman did, they had the different people take him around and show him the different aspects of magic. And one of them was Mr. E. Mr. E.
That's terrible.
He just straight tried to murder him.
It's no You Go Girl.
No, You Go Girl was a name very much of its time, though.
But that to me, that's infinitely more charming than
Mr. E.
Yeah, Mr. E.
He kind of had Moon Knight's modern day costume, though.
Oh, nice.
No mask, though.
That's the coolest part of the costume.
Oh, I like he wears a suit and has a mask, like El Santo.
Oh, the latest
except
one.
Except he's not fat.
And or dead.
Well, Santo wasn't always dead.
But he's currently dead.
Romance and women and werewolves.
With the mask.
With the man never took the mask off.
I wonder if he was like Mel Mascaris where he even took showers with the mask on.
Yeah, Ric Flair saw Mel Mascaris without his mask on.
Did his face melt like the Covenant?
No, it's because he couldn't wear it on an airplane.
Ah.
So I forget who. It was JR told the story. He said they were in an airport. It was when Mel Mascaris came into WCW to squash Mick Foley. And Cornette and JR tried to use it to get Foley over, where he took the big fucking giant bump off the apron onto the concrete. Mm-hmm. Which, I've seen that match and watching that, it's like, that's really impressive now, but if you were watching it at the time and you didn't really think about it, you would have just been like, oh. But, I mean, the motherfucker falls straight back and slams his head against the concrete. That would have hurt like a son of a bitch. But, no, they were in the airport, and Flair, like, taps him. He goes, hey, see that guy? That's Mel Mascaris. And he's like, what? And he goes, you know, he looked like a aging Mexican businessman, but... When he put the mask on and, you know, pulled his tights up to his belly button or his chest.
Yeah, I know. That was the weirdest thing. He'd pull it past his belly button.
Well, it's because he was fat.
Okay.
They used to do that. They used to pull him up really high because if they were fat. Because he still had big arms. Like, he had a big upper body, but then he had a fat belly, so he'd pull his tights up over it.
Why is it cool for women to still do that? I never understood that.
Pulling their pants up really high?
Yeah.
Well, do you really know? Because they usually wear something over it.
I usually know.
I don't know. I don't keep up with the fashion. Lauren does.
When they wear stuff to expose their midriff, you can kind of tell it's up past their belly button. I'm like...
They're not exposing their midriff.
That's what I said. I'm like, you're not really committing to it.
That's your stomach.
Yeah, but I'm like, you're not really committing to it. But I've seen enough people do it to where it's apparently a thing.
Maybe it's a new thing, or maybe it's just a California thing.
No, because I've seen it on movies and TV.
Oh.
And the thing is, I've seen it enough to where it's not just fat girls doing it. Even girls are in really good shape that don't have a belly, they do it too. And I'm like, I don't...
Weird.
Maybe they're self-conscious, I don't know.
Could be.
Flash 77, again, Joshua Williamson, art by Howard Porter.
So this one was, they're starting the... It's basically... Captain Cold is going around and trying to recruit all the rogues to be a part of the Luther Year of the Villain plan, where they all get new powers. I'm wondering what you're going to give Weather Wizard. Like, he's already got storm powers. How do you increase his powers? He's apparently batshit crazy now.
Well, maybe they'll make him not crazy.
Would that really make him more effective? He's technically more dangerous. I mean, he has a giant scythe now.
Yeah, but he'd be more effective if he was saying...
Maybe, but he'd be more unpredictable if he's crazy. But yeah, they, so that's going on. And then Flash has the genius fucking plan of, well, so they beat the Black Flash. Well, they didn't really beat him. They tricked the Black Flash into leaving by having, the guy with the Steel Force not use his powers. What he comes to is he's drawn by the Force users using their powers.
Yes.
So he just stopped using his powers. And then he couldn't find him, and he, like, ran away. So he went to get the Strength Force user, who's a bitch. And he went to get, I think his name was Psyche, the Sage Force user, the bad one.
Yeah, from before.
He told him. And, of course, he's a bad guy. So the first thing he does is he's like, all right, I'm going to mind control these two and make them kill each other. Because then Black Flash will come and get them, and I can get away. Which, it's like, why did you trust this idiot?
To move the story along?
I guess. So they got the two stories going on. The problem is, the more interesting story is the Rogues. And they're dealing with Kid Flash, and I forget what the other girl's name is, but she doesn't even have a superhero name. He just calls her by her name.
Yeah, that was when we weren't reading the Flash, so I don't know who she is. And
I know who she is. She got no. She got the Flash powers during the
War of the Flashes.
The deal with which we did read.
Oh yeah, we did. Never mind. I don't
remember
anything.
She got the powers then.
Wasn't much of a war though.
No, it did something with Wally, and then he ended up fucking killing everybody. So kind now he's going to outer space, where in outer space you can only run so much.
But they don't know that.
Yeah, well, he can run around a spaceship or something. He can go to Deep Space Nine.
We just gotta grit our teeth and just bear the stupid storyline with the
I want to get back. Well, it's like even he realized it, because then he's like, okay, we're gonna do this. He's like, I'm gonna take this fucking Year of the Villain thing and do something with it.
Yeah, he seems the only one so far doing something with it that's interesting.
I think people are doing stuff with it. We're just not reading their books.
But we read enough DC books. We should kind of have a good grip on what they're doing.
We don't read Detective Comics. We don't read Superman. We only read King's Batman. God knows he's not doing anything with anyone else.
That's the mainline Batman in our defense. And nobody.
We don't read Titans, Teen Titans. We don't read a lot of books.
Yeah, because most of those are jobber books. Let's be honest. Superman, you could argue, is a big book.
Wonder Woman? She's in the Justice League.
I said we should have read Wonder Woman a long time ago. As soon as I told you G. Willow Wilson was on the book.
Yeah, but I wanted to stop reading it when what's his face left? Rucka.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I don't want to read it anymore.
Well, to be fair, G. Willow Wilson didn't pick up the book right away. I found out later that in the interim that she picked it up. All right, that's going to do it for the DC portion of the show. Let's move on to Marvel with Absolute Carnage number 204, writer Donny Gates, art by Ryan Stegman. This was a lot shorter than the first issue. I'll say that right off the back. I remember when I first pulled this up, I was like, oh, God, that first issue was like 60, 90 pages. I'm like, I don't want to read that again. And then sure enough, this is a 30-page story, so even though I'm not fire, particularly with this storyline, I'm glad it was significantly shorter.
So this, they again decided to split people up.
For reasons?
Which, I don't know why people, there was one book we read where they questioned splitting people up, saying it was a bad idea.
Well, to be fair, there's a million Carnages everywhere, so staying together wouldn't really do a lot of good when Carnage could conceivably be anywhere.
But, so what they did was, they have to go save people who have had a symbiote because they have the codec. Metal Gear. And,
I was like, if he's not gonna say it, I'm gonna say it.
It means they can talk to Carnage by tapping their ear in really bad quality. Yeah, they could do that. Or, like, Carnage can, like, call, and he's like, hey, do you know anything about old movies? And then some Chinese girl will talk to him. Yeah, so they're trying to save them all. We found out that Venom's son may be a – I'm not sure. The son is either a symbiote himself or he has the symbiote because his mom passed it to him when she gave birth because her grave wasn't dug up. And that means Carnage didn't grab it, but it's in the kid, which told them, well, we got to go get to Maker because he's got the kid. Because, again, they left the children with the Maker.
That's never
a good idea. Hang on one sec.
That's never a good idea. Remember for, like, forever, Hickman built him up to be, like, a serious villain? And then as soon as someone else got him, they just made him a goofball?
Well, Hickman never did anything with him.
Oh, yeah, he did a ton of stuff when in his Ultimates run. And then in Secret Wars.
Well, yeah, but that was in fucking Ultimate Universe. Nobody cares about that.
And then Secret Wars.
They killed it. He killed it. I don't remember him. Secret Wars. Stop bringing Secret Wars up. Nothing in Secret Wars mattered because it was an alternate reality.
Well, still good.
And then it had no effect on the Marvel Universe.
Still.
Whatsoever.
Maker was good in that.
I don't even remember him. I don't remember much of Secret Wars. It was one of those big giant crossovers that I have very little memory of.
Mm.
Except it was supposed to change everything, and all we got was Miles Morales and the Marvel U, who everyone proceeded to ignore, especially after Bendis.
Yeah, the funny thing is, when he was in the Ultimate Universe, he was special, and as soon as they put him in 616, he was immediately forgotten as, oh yeah, that's the other Spider-Man.
Yeah, but he never sold as well as the Peter Parker Ultimate Spider-Man.
I don't think he's selling particularly well now.
No, he's not. His book is not the most popular Spider book.
I don't even know who's writing it. Can't wait to see the outrage on the internet when it gets canceled. I don't think it ever will get canceled. I think he was
good in the movie.
Yeah, because that was written by other people who wrote him with a personality.
Well, still, just saying, he was good in the movie.
In the comic books, his personality is that he's black.
He's not black though. He's part black, part Puerto Rican.
Well, then that's his gimmick. So they
he's feel, also young.
They feel the need to not give him a gimmick or a personality.
Well, he has a personality.
Give me one.
He cares about his friends.
Oh, I know what. I got one. His personality is that he's friends with Genki. Who makes up for with all the personality. Just make Genki the next Spider-Man. Have an Asian fat Spider-Man. Who's funny. And a giant,
I don't know if that...
And a giant nerd.
I don't know if that works.
Be funny, though.
That's trouble.
Fat Asian nerd who's also Spider-Man.
It's trouble.
Trouble, 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 trouble. Whoa, whoa. House of X, number 3 of 6. Writer Jonathan Hickman, art by Pepe Lazar.
So the whole goal of the X-Men is to stop Nimrod from being created. Mm-hmm. Because Moira, in her 9 previous lives, discovered that we can't stop AI from being a thing, but we can stop Nimrod from being created, which is the thing that will lead to the end of mutants and technically humans. So they're going to get on a spaceship and an elite team of X-Men, including Mystique. It's Nightcrawler, Wolverine, Cyclops, Jean Grey, who, by the way, why the fuck is she in that version of the costume?
Yeah, they've explained everything so far into great detail, except her wearing the costume again.
That's the worst costume she had.
Yeah, the Marvel Girl costume with the big yellow mask and the green outfit.
It's a green dress. It's like a sundress. Fuck that shit. She don't look like a superhero. Well, but anyway, her, Mystique, Nightcrawler, Wolverine, Cyclops, M, who I guess because she has super strength, and there's probably somebody else. I can't remember. It wasn't the most impressive team of X-Men.
No, well, you have Wolverine and Nightcrawler. That's a pretty good team.
Well, Jean Grey's strong, so that's okay. But they're going to this thing, and you know, somebody immediately asked, like, can't we just blow the fucking thing up? And they're like, well, no, because there's civilians on it. And Wolverine makes the argument of, yeah, if they're on a fucking space station that's building things to commit genocide, are they really innocent? And she's like, well, they don't know. They're just... And then she's like, they're just scientists doing their job. But in Hickman's little in-between page things, they point out their fucking families are up there with them.
Yeah.
So, yes, they are, in fact, innocent. But... So they're going there to sneak on and shoot Mother Mold into the sun, apparently. And then they have to get on and get back. They have a debate on whether or not, well, can we bring like a little Krakoa plantling so that we can, you know, teleport back if shit goes bad? And they explain, no, you can't do that because if they get a hold of it, I don't know what the fuck they're going to do. Only mutants can get through the portals, but whatever. He's like, no, we can't do that. We can't bring it. So that's no good. Well, they land on the ship and they're running around and they had to call all their sentinels, which were not on the base. They had to call them all back, but they weren't going to get there fast enough. So they're like, okay, we'll just distract them. We'll fight them at all the, like the docks, but they don't go through the docks. They just land on top of the fucker and drill their way in. And one of the guys, he realizes they're coming through, so he sets a bomb, and he blows himself up, and he also blows up the Blackbird. So the X-Men are all dead. Probably not, but it ends with you wondering, are the X-Men all dead? And then the only other thing they did was Sabretooth was being arraigned. He was going to go to a super, super villain prison, but Emma Frost shows up, and... with two of the Stepfords, and she's like, yeah, so since we're a sovereign nation now, he has diplomatic immunity, so we're taking him with us, and here's a letter from the president. And she's such a bitch. And I've said this before, I had this problem with Dr. Doom. If a fucking ambassador comes to America and murders 10 people, diplomatic immunity does not mean he gets to go back to his home country.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Well, they're also the Krakoa Nation, and they could easily murder millions of people. So.
Yeah, everybody's afraid of them, so I guess
and
that's
let's be
what
honest.
It
is. Let's be honest, I don't think it's too – I don't think it's pushing too far because it's just Sabretooth. Now, if a bunch of X-Men were going back to America or other countries and murdering people, I think then you'd have a problem.
Well, the thing they haven't said yet, they kind of indicated, are they going to, like, punish Sabretooth when he gets back to Krakoa?
No, because he did what he was supposed to do. And also...
He killed people!
Did he? I don't remember him killing anybody.
Yeah, they pointed out the people he killed. And he killed people before that, too. He was a fucking murderer.
Now, to be fair, they could bring up the fact that, hey, when he was killing those people, he stole some information, and we started peeking around the information. You guys are making genocide machines to kill mutants on a mass level. Care to explain that?
That's the entire world. That's not just the United States.
Oh, okay.
So, It's like, well, look what they do. They fucking teleport all around. They can do whatever they want. Fuck, I'd build genocide robots too.
Would you have to build genocide? Could you not just build like, okay, why do you need the genocide robots? Don't you have the Avengers?
Well, the Avengers aren't going to kill the X-Men.
Yeah, but they can stop them.
Eh, maybe.
And it's not like the X-Men have never done anything good in the past.
They didn't stop Onslaught.
Yeah, they did, eventually.
No, they didn't. He just absorbed them all, and then they were gone in shitty Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee universe.
Also, how did they beat Nobody. How did they beat Onslaught?
They, mutants he didn't really affect, but if humans went into him, they would, like, absorb his essence, and they would die, but Franklin Richards created the Jim Lee Rob Liefeld universe and, like, teleported them there.
It's
it
all
was stupid. Mark Waid wrote it, by the way.
Oof. Oof. Yikes.
Yeah. Well, he was told what to do, but the best part about Onslaught was the issues where Franklin Richards is just hanging out in the swamp with Man-Thing. And, like, Man-Thing was trying to protect him while he's, like, holding a ball with another universe in it. That was the best thing.
Yeah. I did like the attention to his run on Avengers Detail. The space station they're on is the Soul's Hammer that Iron Man made to deal with the what was the name of the thing where the planets collided? Incursions. There we go.
Oh, so, which nobody remembered but Hickman because he wrote it.
And me.
Oh, okay, because I didn't remember what that was. I think I actually mentioned, like, man, they built that fucking thing pretty quick.
No. My thing is, what is it still doing up there?
Well, what were they going to do? Fucking send spaceships to the sun to fix it?
Well, remember Reed remade everything, so I imagine he'd probably want to do that giant doomsday weapon.
Oh, Reed forgot about it.
Just like he forgot about Ben.
Yeah.
He fixed Doom's face, but not Ben's condition.
Well, and Doom's still evil, so.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of good at dinner. I bet Ben would have appreciated being able to turn back into human whenever he wanted to.
Probably.
Marvel Comics 1000 by Various.
And when he says by Various, he means by every creative team who works or has ever worked for Marvel.
Now, here's the thing. We usually run down story by story when they do this anthology style.
We can't.
We can't even bother because there's just – it's literally – I told Alex, I'm like, it's 93 pages and some of these stories are literally a page long.
They're all a page long.
No, aren't some
every
of them –
every single one of them was a page long.
I thought a couple of them were two pages.
No, they were all one page long. However, some of them continued because – okay, so Al Ewing tried to give this book – so this book did two things. It had every year in the Marvel Universe, and then it also tried to have like this overarching storyline that drew it all together. However, some of the writers clearly had no interest in that, So they didn't. So every like 12 pages or so – you'd have another Al Ewing story where he tries to make this all fit together. Now, some of these one-page stories were really good, and some of them weren't so good, but there were so many of them, it's really hard to go through them one by one. I know the Mark Waid little short text thing he wrote on Captain America – I know people are bitching because he wrote something else and they made him replace it.
Mm-hmm.
They made him rewrite it because they thought it would offend some people.
Mark Waid wrote something offensive to conservatives? What?
Yeah, because he didn't just put over America. He talked about America's problems and they thought, well, Captain America shouldn't really do that. Even though Captain America does that all the fucking time. But they're like, no, we don't want to have him do that. So that was okay. There was a story where Mary Jane was talking about her reaction to Gwen Stacy's death that I thought was really well done. And that's something we've never read before.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that one was really good. Chip Zdarsky, or no, Allred did a funny Doctor Strange washing his costume.
Oh, that was sweet. Where
he had to fight it into the washing machine.
But then once it got into the washing machine, he just gave up and accepted it.
Because it was too late and it couldn't get out.
My favorite one. That one is kind of... My favorite was a sweet Spider-Man story where Spider-Man saves the woman and she asks to know his name.
Tells him his name's Ben.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, so she names the kid Ben in honor of Spider-Man. The She-Hulk story was cute. There were two Deadpool stories that one of them was Gail Simone and that one is kind of funny. Where, cause there was also this thing where someone was asking them like, why you're a hero, I think is what they were asking. Mm-hmm. And Deadpool couldn't, he's Deadpool, so he never actually got to answer the question.
He kept dancing around it. As soon as he would explain, he was like, you know, I could really explain if I had a lot more than just the one panel to do it in.
Yeah, he was complaining about the 9-panel form. Like, when he notices, because it's Deadpool, so he breaks the fourth wall. So he's like, ooh, 9 panels, we're getting artistic. And then when he got to the last panel, he complains about the 9-panel format and talks like a fucking full panel full of text and never actually gets to the point. I thought that was cute. There were a lot of fun little stories in this, but they were only one page. So the big thing at the end was the big overriding story in this was you had the Enclave, who are a group of evil scientists who have worked throughout Marvel history, trying to take over the world. And there was a mask created by like fucking Merlin. King Arthur's Merlin, that makes you it makes you the equal of anyone you're fighting. It doesn't make you better than them. It makes you their equal.
If you're using magic, why wouldn't you just make it so it automatically makes them stronger?
I don't know. But it makes them equal. And a lot of different heroes have used this mask throughout history. And the last page is, there's a new guy who has the mask. So he is a guy who is equal to everyone he fights. Which, I mean, I guess that's kind of impressive. You don't really have an advantage. You're just equal to them.
Exactly.
So, and you have to be a good guy for it to work. You have to have good intentions because the evil scientists, they tried to wear it, and it didn't do anything.
Because that's not complicated or convoluted at all.
No, but only a hero can have it. But we have a new Midnight Rider.
Is it Dusty Rhodes?
That's what I told Tony. I'm like, now his actual name is the Masked Raider. But I read it as the Midnight Rider.
He needs to fight Apocalypse.
And I thought, you know, oh, he's got a black mask, and we don't know who it is, and their tea is Dusty Rhodes.
And you know why he needs to fight Apocalypse, right?
Why?
Who's Apocalypse's minions?
The Four Horsemen. Arn, Tully, Flair, and Barry Windham, or Sid.
Not Sid. Or never Oli. Sid. Tony Roma.
Paul Roma.
Paul Roma. And Chris, Tony Roma.
Or Chris Benoit. Brian Pillman.
Mongo McMichael.
Mongo and Ric Flair. Oh my god, if Mongo is in a Marvel comic. That would be amazing.
I just want someone to do the line from Blazing Saddles.
Enough of that shit.
Here comes Mongo.
I don't think that's what it's going to be, but Al Ewing is a good writer. And I will read the 6 issues of The Masked Raider.
Assuming.
Because I think it's a good gimmick. A guy's going out to kill these guys who are secretly involved in every aspect of the Marvel Universe. And we don't know who he is. It's probably Hawkeye.
It's good that they're making it 6 issues because it's probably going to get killed.
No, I'm guessing it's 6 issues because Marvel launches 8 million books a month and they all last 6 issues.
Yeah.
Nobody buys.
Isn't that a coincidence? Just long enough to have a trade.
Yeah.
Huh. What are the odds?
Christopher Priest wrote a story, and this is so David Walker. Priest wrote this story about a weird story about Black Panther, where he shit on people in the 70s for wearing African clothes. Mm-hmm. It was a really weird story.
That's Christopher Priest, though.
Where he's like, Yeah, so when you're like fucking wearing the African, the Wakandan headdress, and then you fucking go sell drugs to kids, like, that's not really cool. You should probably act more like the Wakandans do, and that would honor us more.
And then somebody pants T'Challa and called him a nerd.
Yeah, they're like, fucking nerd. Do whatever we want, motherfucker.
I'm from the streets to the maximum effect. It was actually Nate Diaz he was talking to.
They should have had a crossover with Uncle Ruckus. I would have popped for that.
That'd be quite excellent.
Mr. Black Panther is right. You shouldn't be looking up to the...
What's his name again?
Whoa, is that you?
Oh, you hear me?
Yeah, you turned on your speaker again, probably.
No, my VR headset turned on.
Okay, because I heard a voice and recognize it.
I don't know why. It's hanging up. I only pull the headset down when I'm using it.
I'm doing your t-shirt bit. Is that your boyfriend on the other line?
No. I don't have a boyfriend.
Thanos 5 of 6, writer Teeny Howard, art by Ariel Ovaletti.
Why isn't this called the Gamora book?
Because it's about her relationship with Thanos, and it won't sell if it's just a Gamora book.
So they couldn't call it Thanos and Gamora?
They should have called it that, because that's really what the book is, but...
Having good times.
They might be able to trick some people into buying it if they call it Thanos.
Well, in this issue, the big thing was Gamora found out Thanos didn't really give a shit about her. Not really. He just thought, which we knew, like, he thought that Death wanted him to have her around. But then he realized she really didn't, so he stopped giving a shit about her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to find him and is trying to kill him. With Proxima Midnight's trident that never misses, even though it always fucking misses.
Yeah.
Lame weapon she has. It was a good issue, though. I mean, I like it. I like how Thanos is written in it, and I like how Gamora's written in it. But, you know, it's like, what am I going to say about this? The next issue is the last one.
It's a short read. It's a good enough story, but at the same time, you know, it's only going 6 issues, so it doesn't really matter. I feel like the series had a really cool premise, but it seems like already now, even though they're on issue 5, they're running out of steam. It was like, oh, Thanos is really bad. Oh, Thanos meets Gamora. Oh, Thanos is going to raise Gamora. Oh, they have a sweet relationship. And then now they sort of written themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's got to be 6 issues, though, so they can make the trade. All right, and our final book this week, Thor 16, writer Jason Aaron, art by Mike Del Mundo.
So this was the last issue of Thor, because Jason Aaron is finishing up his run, and he's going to end it with a Thor spinoff called, I think, King Thor. Because now the coolest thing in this was Odin was so they're having like Thor's coronation as the new Allfather, and Thor doesn't show up. He's out saving the world, you know, fucking getting kids hearts they need for transplant,
because he doesn't want the title, and Odin sort of
no, they didn't say it's not that he doesn't want the title, it's that he, instead of coming to just accept the title and partying, he wants to earn it. So he's out doing things that he thinks the Allfather should do, which is helping all of the 10 realms.
Mm-hmm.
That was the gimmick, because Thor is a better person than Odin ever was. So he's going to be really different. But he wrote, Odin was really pissed off because he didn't deliver his speech. And then he basically gave the speech to Freya. And it was a really nice speech. And, you know, Odin's never the most loving towards Thor, but I mean, he put him over stronger in this than he's ever done to Thor's face. And Thor wasn't there to hear it, which kind of sucked. But I thought that was the best bit of writing in this, actually. We found out the leader of Roxxon is not in trouble for any of the things he did during the War of the Realms because he said Wakanda altered the footage and it was all fake news. And everybody believed him. I loved that. So he's still a bad guy. And Thor also stole the feast for his coronation, which really pissed off Volsag to go feed starving children in Dark Elf land.
Why was it funny, though?
Because what? The Dario Augur thing?
No, why was it funny that Volstagg was upset because he took the
Because he's a big fat ass. And he's not in the Warriors 3 anymore. The Warriors 3 are apparently tasked with being the prison guards for all the unrepentant leaders in the War of Realms who did not agree to peace. So, like, Surtur's daughter and the Troll King. Because the trolls are living on Asgard now. Like, they're building their own little place. Because Thor's like, yeah, we won't go to war with you anymore, but you can have this little piece of land. And they're like, okay, but Ulic wasn't cool with that. So he's locked up, and she's locked up, and somebody else is locked up. And Malekith is not dead. He's also locked up. The young Thor and old Thor went back to their times, but old Thor did point out, like, eh, well, you know, this is a really happy day and everything, but, you know, I'm still going to be alive after everything's destroyed and everyone's dead, so that sucks. And apparently, this is the end of the Thor series for now, and the series Aaron is going to do is his last Thor story, which is Thor preventing old Thor's future.
Mm-hmm.
So a good epic story to end on. But he did write his goodbye note in this book, which I thought was weird.
Was it weird that they had the giant Loki at the end? Is that what they're setting up, that Loki's going to be the big bad behind all this?
I don't think so. Because Loki is he's the king of the frost giants now. Because his dad is dead.
Because he killed him.
Yeah, well, but by cutting his way out of his stomach, he's the king of the frost giants now. And he wanted to come talk to Thor because he's like, yeah, we're brothers. We're both going to be rulers, so we should be cool, but you're not here, so.
I don't know. I felt like this book was kind of a waste of time.
I actually liked it. I thought it had some cute stuff in it, and it was setting up the last phase in Aaron's 27-year run on Thor.
25 of which we were setting up the...
Come on, he's been writing it forever.
I know, but it was... Let's be honest, the build-up for War of the Realms really wasn't...
Was kind of the shits, but yeah. The War of the Realms itself was pretty good.
I would say the opposite in the sense that it took forever, and then once we got to it, it's like, yeah, it was good, but it wasn't really worth the two.
No, I liked it, and I thought most of the tie-ins we were.
You just say that because you like the Punisher tie-ins.
I really like those Punisher tie-ins, and I like Punisher in the series.
Cool.
So yeah, that might have been a part of it, but no, I thought it had a satisfying end, and he used a lot of stuff from his series in it, and now he had a loose end in the series, and he's fucking tying it up. Who do you know does that? Who ties up everything that they put in an extremely long run? Not Chris Claremont.
Boom.
Not Jonathan Hickman.
Boom.
Only Jason Aaron. So I can appreciate him for that. He had a good run on Thor. He had a great run on Thor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sad to see it end. Hopefully he just keeps writing Conan.
Yeah, which is very similar in many ways. All right, let's end this week's show with next week's books, but as I play this song, Alex probably won't be able to hear it. I know why now, but you're probably just not going to hear this now.
That's okay.
Alex who can't hear the song, that's Lynyrd Skynyrd, Give Me Back My Bullets. Now, the reason why I play that, because that used to be the Briscoes theme, and that's been the best theme they've ever had.
I like their current one.
It's not as good as Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Well.
Now, the reason why it wouldn't...
The sky, boy.
If I had to do a little bit of technical stuff, the reason why I wasn't playing for you is because I selected the music before I plugged my setup.
Okay.
I didn't want to refresh it because I didn't want to risk an ad playing on the podcast.
Understood. I'm looking through comics to try to find stuff to read.
It's funny, in a week where we read Marvel 1000, it really wasn't that bad, even though it was 93 pages.
No, well, because every story was one page, so.
Also, I read, like, I started reading comic books, like, at midnight, so it helped.
Oh. Okay, let's see. Oh, no Batman?
Yeah, that's weird, because that's a bi-weekly book, but,
it didn't come out this week.
Are you sure you're looking at the right week again?
Yes, I'm positive.
Okay, just want to make sure we...
Positive, because I don't recognize any of these. Doomsday Clock, number 11.
Oh my god!
Holy shit. Green Lantern, number 11.
I hope the next issue is as good as the last one, but I don't think it will be.
Probably not.
Because I like it, and things I like can't stay good for me.
And unfortunately, we have to read Legion of Superheroes Millennium, number 1.
Oh, God.
By Bendis. Lois Lane, number 3.
That should just be his name. Bendis. Ugh.
His last name is,
Or just, his name is now just Bendis. It's like,
well, Lois Lane will be good. It might be good.
No, Lois Lane will be good.
I'm really ready to read Legion. And he might not be writing the weekly book when it comes out.
Okay, good. Hopefully not.
Cause this is only 2 issues.
Good.
So, yeah. And he'll have to establish a new continuity, so. You wanna read Spawn 300?
I'm saying he already does that.
Okay, this is bullshit though. They already announced it. Spawn makes history. With this 300th issue, Spawn becomes the longest running independent series in comic. That's not true. Cerebrus had 300 issues.
Yeah. Well, the next issue will
be.
When
it gets to 301, it will have the most.
Yeah.
And it even says records will be broken with Spawn 301. And it's like, well, you're fucking saying and then admitting it's bullshit.
Let's be honest, though. Image isn't really an indie publisher anymore.
You want to read this?
Let's put on the maybe pile, and if it's the weak thing
enough. It's being written by Scott Snyder.
Spawn?
Yeah.
Fine. At least, if anything, it'll be a crap show.
Okay. Well, it's a 300 issue. We've never read Spawn before. We'll have no idea what's going on.
You've never read Spawn before?
I read it for, like, the first 17 issues.
I'm not saying that as someone who's read Spawn. I'm saying that as, Alex, you've been reading comics for forever. And I presume...
I read, like, the first 15, 16 issues.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Conan the Barbarian, number 9.
Yeah!
Fantastic the Four, number 14.
Why are you calling it Fantastic the Four?
Because I'm trying to be crazy.
I almost wanted to read that Yancey Street book, but I was like, it'd be another book.
Yeah, I didn't want to read that. House of X, number 4.
Yay! Continue.
Savage Avengers, number 5.
Oh, God.
The best comic book.
It's really good. I don't know if it's the best.
Ever. I fucking read Savage Avengers and I'm like, man, this reminds me of like fucking Sandman and...
You're kidding. You don't mean that.
Yeah,
I know you really like the book.
I am kidding, but okay. I do love it.
Okay.
And that's it. That's all the books.
Let's not say things we can't dig back.
It's fucking Sandman, Watchmen. Fucking Morrison's Animal Man. It's up there with all of them. All my favorites. Fucking Transmetropolitan. Savage Avengers.
So, It's a bit of
Spider Jerusalem would fit in great with the Savage Avengers. He fucking killed everybody.
Mm-hmm. All right, that puts us at 9 titles. Not too bad.
No.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios.